Welcome to the Brexit Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Hemming, and we've got a bit of a different show for you this week. I'm actually on my own. I think the other two guys are around the world somewhere. I think Jen's flown off to Portugal and Warren somewhere in France to keep up European relations. So we've got a little bit of a different show for you this week. I've been having a look around, see what Brexit news we've got. And one thing that caught my eye was, how did we come to have the EU referendum in the first place? It's obviously been a cause of much consternation and has triggered everything happening, triggering Brexit itself. David Cameron, perhaps realising his mistake, clearly fell on his sword straight away. And we haven't heard a peep out of him since. So how did he allow himself, if he figured that we would never leave the European Union, how did he allow himself to give the vote to the public? Well, I've seen a piece from Mark Darcy, who's the BBC's parliamentary correspondent. It's an excellent piece, and it's titled How Rebel MPs Outfoxed Cameron to get an EU referendum. So I thought it would be worth, as a one-off show, having a little run-through of that to see how it actually came about in the first place. And it's kind of a cloak and dagger story. So for today's show, it's going to be quite a short one, but I thought I'd run you through that. Now, Darcy states that Labour's Tony Wright and the Speaker of the House, John Bercow, are two key influential figures. They're probably not names we really associate with Brexit, but he says these are the guys that will pull the string. And it starts with Tony Wright. So these two created the parliamentary channels through which some backbench guerrillas put relentless pressure on Cameron to hold the EU referendum. That's the background to it. So Wright is a politics professor, and he came up with the backbench business committee, which sounds a pretty serious group of people. They'd have the power to choose subjects for debates on votable motions on the floor of the Commons. So normally this is votes going to be chosen by the government, but this new group, the backbench business committee, actually had these new powers. One of the Brexit campaigner and Tory MP, Peter Bone, is going on record to say if he hadn't had the backbench business committee, I don't think the referendum would have happened. So we wouldn't be quite where we are today. So what did happen? So a group of hardline Tory backbenchers saw the potential to make sure the coalition didn't drift away from two conservative values, from true conservative values. So they want to keep the government in check. So he was a core group of MPs, the likes of Steve Baker, John Barron, Peter Bone, Douglas Carswell, Chris Chope, Philip Hollobaugh, David Nuttall and Mark Reckless. So they would meet for an hour every Tuesday morning at 8:30 in Room R, which was an out-of-the-way committee room in the Parliamentary Office Building of Portcullis House. They'd go through the Commons agenda, seeking opportunities to push their view, and they'd agree on tactics. Bone recalls how hush-hush it all was. He said nothing was ever leaked from this. So the other thing to note, there's no big names, so it didn't look like an embryonic leadership campaign or a challenge to Cameron. So the group wanted to maintain diplomatic relations with the likes of David Davis, John Redford, but it didn't embrace any of them. That's what Darcy goes on to say. And the government whips, who perhaps should have been taking more notice, kind of dismissed it as a low-level insurgency that really wasn't going to make much impact. So Bone and Hollobaugh were on the backbench business committee, along with the more maverick Philip Davis, and they would be well placed to push for debates that furthered its agenda. One of the agendas was getting an EU referendum. And they also had, in their chair seat, was Labour MP Natasha Engel, and she was quite sympathetic to the cause. So this kind of niche group behind the scenes was starting to build a bit of a head of steam. So behind the scenes, they drew up a motion calling for a referendum, started accumulating signatures from MPs. When they had a convenient Thursday afternoon slot for a backbench debate appeared with no rival contenders, Hollobaugh suggested the moment had come to strike and the referendum motion was put down. So then they had to launch a whipping operation to keep supporters on side, because the government countered, declared a three-line whip against the motion, and also rescheduled the debate from a Thursday afternoon to a prime-time Monday afternoon slot. So in theory, drawing it out into the open and therefore trying to defeat it. So the task for the Room R group was to hold their line against determined attempts to erode it. So here's a little extract from a briefing circulated by Steve Baker, who led their whipping operation. It was called the Rebel Commander by Tory website Guido Fawkes. Do people care enough about the issue? In every constituency, voters are signing the People's Pledge promising to support candidates who give them an in-out referendum. More than twice as many people want a referendum on leaving the EU as wanted one on the voting system. More people attended the People's Pledge Congress on Saturday than have been protesting at St Paul's, notwithstanding the relative coverage. On the 25th of September, at least 40,000 motorcyclists took part in the Motorcycle Action Group's nationwide protest, EU Hands Off Biking. The only question that matters today is whether our position in the EU is a proper subject for a referendum. One way or another, all three parties have previously said that it is. So they're pretty firm on what they want and where they want to go with everything. A lot of Tory backbenchers then went back to their constituencies, talked it over to the association chairman, returned emboldened to vote on the motion. And this is back in 2011. So on the 25th of October, the debate was finally opened by David Nuttall, who was a 2010 intake MP who'd already established himself as one of the most rebellious occupants of the Tory benches. So he rejected the argument that it was not the right time to discuss the issue, and said also it was going to take years for the referendum to be held anyway, even if it was passed. And the three-line government whip meant that any members of the government who backed the motion would have to resign. So two unpaid parliamentary private secretaries, Stuart Jackson and Adam Holloway, fell on their swords. But they were among 81 Tory backbenchers who supported the motion. So the key here is that they were gathering a groundswell of support, including some whose support came as a surprise to the core group. It's a classic example, writes Darcy, of a government winning a vote but losing the politics of an issue. In a previous parliamentary year, there had not been such a direct route for the growing head of Eurosceptic steam inside the Tory party to manifest. So, Dr. Wright's creation allowed a Commons show of strength that the Prime Minister could not ignore, and clothed the Groom R group in new credibility. So all the time they were building up some credibility, kept up the pressure. John Barron launched a campaign urging Mr. Cameron to place on the statute book before the next general election a commitment to hold a referendum during the next Parliament. And nearly 100 Tory MPs signed a letter backing the idea, the thought being that while the Lib Dems and Labour might vote a referendum bill down, they'd put themselves firmly on the wrong side of public opinion in the process, while the Tories would preempt UKIP and give themselves an important, unique selling point at the general election. So you can see the UKIP influence here with the Tories thinking that to try and neutralise the effect of UKIP, they would get in first. Finally, January 2013, the Prime Minister delivered his Bloomberg speech. Democratic consent for the EU in Britain is now wafer thin. Simply asking the British people to carry on accepting a European settlement over which they have little choice is a path to ensuring that when the question is finally put, and at some stage it will have to be, it is much more likely that the British people will reject the EU. That is why I'm in favour of a referendum. I believe in confronting this issue, shaping it, leading the debate, not simply hoping a difficult decision will go away. So Cameron so feels that the more we hang on to the EU without giving the people a vote, the more they're going to resent the EU. So for Cameron, that brought a measure of peace, at least on the euro issues. There was a few other rebellions for him, but no referendum bill would be approved by his Lib Dem coalition partners. So while we're still in the coalition, there's no chance of the referendum. And this is where John Bercow enters the fray. So Mr. Speaker, with a ruling on an apparently in-house issue that ranks as potentially the most important decision of his speakership. So he allowed an extra amendment to the Queen's speech, stretching the terms of Commons Standing Order 33, probably beyond breaking point in the process. Then he said, conditions and expectations are very different from those in October 79 when this standing order was made. I must tell the House that I've studied the wording of Standing Order 33 very carefully. My interpretation is that the words, a further amendment in the fifth line of the Standing Order, may be read as applying to more than one amendment successively. In other words, only one amendment selected by me is being moved at any time. Once the amendment is disposed of, a further amendment may then be called. So effectively, he is allowed to have an extra amendment to the Queen's speech. The ruling cleared the way for the group to take a near unprecedented step, and a parliamentary chain reaction followed. It became clear that more than 100 Tory MPs would vote for the amendment. So Cameron sidesteps announced the Tory party would back a private member's bill to hold a referendum by 2017, and they even published a draft bill. And when the 2013 ballot for private member's bills was held, James Wharton, the top-ranking Tory, within minutes, he announced that he would attempt to get the referendum bill into law. His bill did eventually clear the Commons, but it ran aground in the Lords. The following year, a similar fate befell an identical bill from Bob Neil. Cameron was cornered into his referendum promise, which became a key plank of his 2015 election manifesto. And the rest is history. And Darcy just finishes and says there's also a lesson for the future. A small, smart, savvy group can exert huge leverage over Parliament, even in the teeth of every resource a government can deploy. And there's nothing in common standing orders that says only Brexiteers can do that. So there's a little bit of background to how the EU referendum was held. I wonder what David Cameron thinks of it now. Perhaps we should get him as a guest in a future podcast. But until that time, thanks very much for listening again. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. The show is produced by Jennifer Hahn, Warren Paul and Tim Hemming, with our theme music by Kevin MacLeod.